Hi, this is Anya Leonard, co-founder of Classical Wisdom, a site dedicated to bringing ancient wisdom to modern minds. And I'm here today with Dr. David Pritchard, the Associate Professor of Greek History here at the University of Queensland, Brisbane in Australia. And thank you first for meeting up with me today.
Thank you, Anya.
We're going to be talking about Athenian democracy. So for our listeners, can you give us maybe a brief outline or explanation of exactly what was democracy in ancient Athens?
Let's see. So democracy in ancient Athens was direct democracy. So a big difference between democracy today and democracy in ancient Greece was that in ancient Greece, ordinary citizens themselves ran the government. So Greek democracy required ordinary citizens to make all the decisions about their state, to be the magistrates in all their law courts, and also to run the government more generally. So Greek democracy meant a lot more participation by ordinary citizens in the machinery of government.
Now, of course, ordinary citizens, I mean, what did it take to be a citizen?
Look, it's a very good question. So the good thing about Greek democracy was that it used a very broad definition of citizenship. So in Athenian democracy, for example, any free male resident of Athens, was a citizen of Athens. Admittedly, he had to have Athenian ancestors, but still that was a very broad definition. And that broad definition was different from what we found in Greek autocracies and Greek tyrannies, where only a few people had political rights. In some cases, only one person made all the decisions.
And so how did democracy rise? How did it begin?
Anya, it's a very good question. And what's interesting about Athens, we have most information about Greek democracy from the city-state of Athens, is that democracy began with a revolution. So in 508 BC, at the end of the 6th century BC, ordinary Athenians rose up in revolt against the efforts on the part of some elite Athenians to create a new autocracy. They rose up in revolt and they said, we want a broader form of government. And the idea of a broader form of government had emerged in the course of the 6th century. And one elite Athenian, in fact, made a proposal to ordinary Athenians about this new democratic system.
And we have Solon was in there at some point, wasn't he?
Look, Solon was a very important reformer. So Solon was a politician who was active in Athens in the early 6th century. So his political career ended around 570 BC. So Solon was very important for broadening the idea of citizenship. So before Solon, it was really only elite Athenians who had any political rights or any importance in the community. Solon said, that isn't right. We need to recognise that all free male residents of Athens share some basic rights. So Solon laid an important foundation for Athenian democracy, even if the democratic revolution that brought in democracy at Athens happened 60 years after Solon's career.
And for the history of democracy, you know, it wasn't clean cut. It wasn't just here's democracy and it lasted. It kind of came in and out of fashion, so to speak. It was tested quite a few times.
Look, it was indeed. So classical Athens is exceptional in this regard. So in classical Athens, there was a democracy from around 508 BC until 322 BC. So that's nearly 200 years of democracy. And what's interesting about the Athenian case study is that there were only very short periods of authoritarian regimes during that history of democracy. Very short oligarchic regimes at the end of the Peloponnesian War and in the last stage of the Peloponnesian War. So Athens is pretty interesting in that it was almost continuously a democracy for about 200 years. Other Greek states were a bit different. So in the 5th century, there was an alternation between democratic systems and oligarchic authoritarian systems in other Greek states, and civil wars were a big problem. But after the Peloponnesian War in the 4th century BC, the whole Greek world really moved towards democracy, and democracy became the normal political system for the Greek world in the course of the 4th century.
And so what brought it to an end?
Let's see. So what kind of brought it to an end was that at the end of the classical period, you get the rise of Hellenistic kingdoms. So the first Hellenistic kingdom that came to dominate the Greek world was the kingdom of Philip II, the father of Alexander the Great. Then, of course, Alexander the Great conquered all but the entire known world. When he died, his generals fought amongst themselves, and out of those battles of the successors emerged several very big Hellenistic kingdoms. And these kingdoms were just much bigger than the microstates of Greece. They were around 10, 20, 50 times bigger even than a big microstate like classical Athens. And these big new regional states were authoritarian, they were run by monarchies, and they had the bad habit over time of supporting oligarchies and tyrannies in Greek microstates rather than democracies. And when, at the end of the Hellenistic period, around 50 BC, Rome had conquered the Greek world, the Romans continued with the general tendency of the Hellenistic kingdoms to install oligarchies and tyrannies rather than democracies. So it was the rise of these regional authoritarian states that kind of doomed democracy in the microstates of the ancient Greek world.
So Plato sort of famously said that all democracies end in tyranny, and kind of felt that there was these sort of natural progressions of government and states that naturally occurred sort of no matter what, the cycle of history type thing. What do you think about that?
Look, Plato is a very important philosopher in the canon of Western philosophy, and Plato wrote a lot of very important books that we still read today with great interest. So, Plato was a great thinker and a great writer. Plato, of course, was also a professor for hire. Plato, in fact, had his own university in Athens, where he taught elite citizens who paid him very big fees to study with him. So Plato was also interested in elite education. Mm. Now, what's interesting about these professors for hire in classical Athens is that they weren't really supporters of the status quo. Mm-hmm. So today, when we think about university professors, we might say, gee, university professors in the main are centre-left or perhaps a bit left-wing. And some people may think that's a problem. Other people might think that's a good thing. But that's a generalisation we often make, that university professors are centre-left, let us say. They support democracy. They like the idea of the rule of law. They like the expansion of human rights, things like that. Mm-hmm. University professors in classical Athens were very different. The university professors in classical Athens were ultra-right. Mm. They were hard right-wing in terms of their politics. Their stance wasn't to support the status quo and support democracy. They were critical of democracy. So people like Plato were able to attract students because they promised those students an anti-democratic education. Mm-hmm. And this also carried through into the writings of Plato. Again, he was a great philosopher. He was the first to think about important things, about the nature of knowledge, for example, and justice. But when it came to democracy, Plato was no friend of democracy in general. And so Plato generally had a very negative take on the history of democracy in Greece. And it's a version of the history of democracy in Greece that I do not agree with.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting too, because obviously, as you said, he was a philosopher for hire, and that he went and tutored in Syracuse later on, which was a tyranny. So he left a real democracy to go to a tyranny.
He did.
So do you think all democracies do end in tyranny?
Look, I don't think they necessarily do. And so I think that Plato and Aristotle had this idea of a cycle of constitutions. And I'm not too sure that their cycle of constitutions is borne out in the historical record of Greek polities in the ancient Greek world. So I don't think their idea of cycles is really correct. And really, the demise of democracy in Greece didn't come about from internal problems in democracy. Indeed, Greek democracies were increasingly successful at solving political problems and collective action problems. Greek democracies kind of became endangered because of the rise of these Hellenistic kingdoms. Mm-hmm. And the kings that ruled these Hellenistic kingdoms were not ideologically committed to democracy.
What is the importance, therefore, of studying ancient governments? Like, how is that applicable to us today? Why is it important?
Look, I think it's applicable in all sorts of ways. I think we can begin with the history of Greek democracy as well, because it is the case that democracies came and went in the ancient Greek world. They were around for a few hundred years, and after the classical period, democracies became less frequent and really endangered an endangered political regime. So I think that's a very important lesson to learn from antiquity, that we shouldn't take our democracies, for example. In the ancient Greek world, democracies did disappear. They were destroyed by geopolitical forces and dysfunctions among the societies as well. So I think we shouldn't take democracy for granted. We should take care of democracy. We should make sure that we develop it. We should make sure that we fix problems that our democracies face right now. So I think that's a very important lesson from ancient Greece. Another reason why it's interesting to think about ancient Greek democracies is that ancient Greek democrats solved lots of problems about politics, really practical problems about politics, like how to collect useful knowledge for making good government decisions, how to keep citizens motivated in a democracy, how to make sure that you're really putting into effect the will of the general electorate. So ancient Greek democratic reformers thought about things, and they came up with practical and institutional solutions for solving collective action problems. Well, we face comparable collective action problems today. So if we want to design practices and institutions to solve these collective action problems, we can look at the way that ancient Greek democrats solved these problems. So we can learn things about institutional design from ancient Athens too. And a final way that we can learn things from ancient Greece is that if we can come up with an explanation for how an ancient Greek democracy worked, if we can come up with an explanation for how an ancient Greek democracy did something important like conduct wars, then those findings are good starting points for research on democracies today. So findings about ancient Greek democracy can serve as important hypotheses for encouraging research about the operation of democracies today.
Yeah, I always find it's almost tragic when people make the same mistakes, that you just have to read a book to Indeed. See how it's going to play out. You know, like, why didn't Hitler learn more about Napoleon, you know, before trying to invade Russia type thing?
Sure.
We have all this wonderful wealth of knowledge. Why don't we use it so we don't make the same mistakes? Because we haven't really changed that much in a couple thousand years. So.
Yeah.
We might as well learn from it, right?
Indeed, yeah. But I think often with the lessons of history, I mean, I think sometimes we can learn direct lessons, like I agree with you, Anya, that Hitler could have learned something from Napoleon, right? Fortunately, that's a very important point.
We're glad that Hitler didn't take that lesson. But
the lessons of history can also be indirect. So history can also be important because it encourages you to think in new ways about what you're looking at right now. So that's another way that history can make a positive impact on what we do. We don't simply learn blueprints about solving things today, but history can simply stimulate thinking about solving things. That's important as well.
Well, thank you very much. For our final question, can you tell me what you're working on at the moment?
I can indeed. I've just published my new book called Athenian Democracy at War. And that book is about the war-making of the Athenians. The important thing there is that the Athenians today are famous for democracy and culture. We still go to performances of Greek tragedy after all. But we overlook the fact that the Athenians were very good at warfare. They were very good in the international realm. So my new book tries to understand why the Athenians were also successful at international relations, war, and peace.
And did they take a bit of the Delian League along with them, I suppose?
So a part of that is about institutional design. A part of that is how to run an empire. And in the 4th century, the Athenians had an anti-empire empire, so they actually learnt from their mistakes in the 5th century. So a part of the book is about that international architecture. But a lot of the book is about how Athenian democracy tested ideas, not simply ideas about culture and politics, but also ideas about war as well, and that was really important. In addition, Athenian democracy made ordinary Athenians feel important, not just in culture, not just in politics, but also in warfare. And that was one of the reasons why Athens was such a great military power.
Oh, well, thank you. I'll put links to that book below. And thank you again for talking with me today.
Thank you.